Next Chapter Podcasts.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Welcome to this episode of Thick Skin Podcast with Jock and Hawk. I'm the host today. Jock, my co-host, is down today. He can't talk, so his voice is out. So I'll be the host today. And today we have a special guest with us, Booger McFarland. Booger grew up in Winnsboro, Louisiana, went to Winnsboro High School, went to LSU from 1995 to 1998, was an all-sec first teamer as a defensive tackle, was drafted in the first round by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he spent about 8 years and won a Super Bowl there, and then followed Tony Dungy to Indianapolis, where he won another Super Bowl. And I read in 2018, he joined Monday Night Football as the series' first ever on-field analyst. A year later, you were elevated to the booth as a solo analyst alongside Joe Tessitore for the 50th season of the Monday Night Football program. And with that promotion, you became the first full-time African-American booth analyst on Monday Night Football since 1985. Booger, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man. Glad to be here, man.
Let's get into it, my man. So we just finished the NFL draft last week. What were your thoughts on the draft? The winners, the losers, great picks, bad picks. What was your thoughts on the draft?
That's a very broad question. Like when you look at from a winner standpoint, every team felt like they won. Okay. But I think most people focus on the quarterbacks and, you know, because that's what drives our sport. Is, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, you really don't have anything. Chicago had the first pick. They took Caleb Williams. So they feel like they got the best player in the draft and they can build their franchise around him. Number two was my guy from LSU, Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner. He's going to D.C., Chocolate City. So he's got an opportunity to kind of lay his legacy there. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be the offensive coordinator. So it's going to be really cool to see what they do with a guy who's very similar to Lamar Jackson. He's not maybe not as big, maybe a little taller, maybe a better passer at this point in his career. And then quarterback went three, you know, and Drake May. He, you know, from North Carolina, quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3. And, you know, overall, I think, you know, when you look at those first three picks, that's kind of how we had it laid out.
Okay.
What was really the big surprise was when, you know, quarterbacks 4, 5, and 6 went. There were six quarterbacks that went in the top 12. You know, when you get some of the guys that start coming off the board, J.J. McCarthy comes off the board. Then, you know, Michael Penix was the shocker of the draft at number 8 to Atlanta. Then Bo Nix went to Denver. So I think the quarterbacks are ultimately what's going to drive the success or failure, or good or bad, as far as the teams that had this draft. But there were a lot of good players. 23 out of the first 32 picks were all offense. Only 9 defensive players. There were 7 defensive tackles that were drafted in the second round. Some good defensive players. But overall, this was considered kind of a top-heavy draft, meaning the top 150. So the top, you know, 4 or 5 rounds were really considered the meat of the draft. After that, it kind of tailed off a little bit.
Okay. What do you think? So I'm thinking more of Caleb Williams when I ask this question. What are the pressures of being a first-round pick and mainly the first pick of the draft to come in and succeed immediately once you've been drafted?
Well, because you know, you instantly go from being a college 20, 21-year-old to now you're the face of a franchise, because when they pick you overall, especially at that position, the quarterback position, they're saying you're the best quarterback for this team, and you're going to be the guy that's going to be out front in the face of what we look like and what we do for the next 5 or 10 years. And that's what they're banking on.
Right.
And there's pressure there. The good programs and the good teams understand how to take that pressure off that young man and kind of disseminate it among the team. So I'm not going to ask this young kid who's a rookie, got his head spinning, he's moving to a new city, he's got to understand what it's like to deal with grown men. You know, he goes from dealing with college kids to men to grown men that's got 2-3 kids and mortgages and houses, and it's a whole different thing. And so the good programs are able to take that young man, put him in their city, and tell him, you just play football. You don't have to worry about being the face. You don't have to worry about doing all these different things. You just play football, and then you can kind of grow into who you are, like more of a natural position on the team. That's what the good ones do. But there's pressure. Anytime you're looked at as number one, no different than when the rankings come out. Everybody's always trying to knock off number
right.
one. Everybody's right. always looking toward number one, and they want to see, man, is he really that good? And so I think there's pressure that's built in. But as I said, the good teams and the good coaches understand how to take that pressure away and just allow the young man to play, whether it's a quarterback or whether you go back a few years ago when Myles Garrett was picked number
right.
one. Whoever's picked number one, you're like, man, like you're supposed to be the best, and you have to be the best. And the good ones know that, and they can deal with that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think he's going into a good situation. I mean, they brought some pieces in before they drafted him. Some good offensive pieces, receivers, running back. So I think he's going into a better situation than Justin Fields was. So, I mean, I think they're kind of trying to soften the impact on him.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's softening the impact. I mean, they got some pieces around it, no question. I mean, when you draft Roma Dunze out of Washington, so now you got your legit number one, DJ Moore, you got Cole Kmet, you got 2 really good tackles. The defense was pretty good. So, like, he's going into a situation where he shouldn't feel like he has to do everything. So, but again, you never know. Like, these guys got to get out on the field and they got to go play. But ultimately, he's going to touch the ball every single play. And he's got to figure out, okay, how do I become – because the quarterback really is this. Like, when we think about it in terms of basketball, a quarterback is the ultimate point guard.
Right.
And your job is not – you don't have to score, you know, 35. But you got to make sure that your guys eat, all your guys get the football. And in crucial situations, you're going to have the ball and you got to make those plays. So if most more quarterbacks look at it that way, then they say, okay, I don't have to be Steph Curry. I need to be John Stockton.
Right.
Okay, I don't have to score 40. I need, you know, 19 and 15 assists. I need to make sure, yeah, I'm going to eat a little bit, but if my other guys are getting the football, then I'm doing my job.
Right. So, Booger, I saw something interesting within the first couple of days of the draft. And you being a first-round draft pick and going through the draft process, tell us what you thought about the video of Coach GM Chris Ballard.
Well, I mean, understand this. Like, during draft season, everybody's trying to send out misinformation because they want to make sure they get their right players. And, you know, a lot of that information is false and made up and – so, you know, sometimes it bothers people, especially when there's information that's made up about kids just so these kids can fall. And again, I get it. These guys are, you know, 19 to 22 years old. So it's not like they're little kids. They're young adults, but it bothers some people. But I just think Chris is one of those stand up guys who understands how this process works. And he probably got tired and fed up of dealing with all the misinformation. And then when the reporters in his town get the information, they got to ask him about it. So now he's got to answer questions
right.
about things that he knows that are made up. And so it becomes a real big waste of time.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're in that position, that's one thing you're not trying to do is waste time.
Absolutely. So with that being said, what was the most shocking selection of the draft to you?
Yeah, well, it had to be the quarterback, Michael Penix.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when you take a quarterback 8th overall, you're saying, hey, we think he's the 8th, at least very minimum, the 8th best player in the draft. We're going to invest $25 or $30 million based on what that number is that he's going to get. And it's that's fine. But the problem with is problem with it is that only a couple months before they gave Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed. So you're going to go out and you're going to give $100 million guaranteed to Kirk Cousins, and you're going to come back 2 months later and draft the quarterback at number eight. Those two together really don't work. And I understand what they're trying to say is we're never going to be up here again, so we're going to prepare for the future. It's hard. It's really hard to do two things at once. I don't care what those two things are. It's really hard. I don't care whatever they are. It's really hard. So they're trying to also win now but prepare for the future. Kirk Cousins is 36 years yep. old. So, like, they're in win now mode. Like, they are trying to win right now, and they didn't draft a player to help this team win right. now. They drafted a player with their first pick to help the team win later. Right. And so that was probably the most surprising thing that happened.
Okay. In your opinion, who was the best pick of the draft?
Yeah. See, that just depends on what you on what you're looking right. for. I think best is always very subjective. And it depends on value. I think when you look at Indianapolis, they got Leiatu Latu, yep. Who most considered the best edge rusher in the draft. They got him at 15. When you look at what the Eagles did, they got Quinyon Mitchell, the best cornerback at, 22 or whatever number they picked, I forget. So, like, when you start to get value at these spots, then is that best? Might not be the best player, but when I can get the top player at a position – and I don't have to draft him first overall. Seattle took Byron Murphy, the best defensive tackle in the draft, at 16. And so when you start to do things like this, man, like it is like you're starting to get some real value. I thought Pittsburgh had a really good draft. They drafted Troy Faletano. Then they came back and got Zach Frazier. You know, they were able to kind of beef up their offensive line. They came back, and I think they took Roman Wilson also, wide receiver. Thought Pittsburgh had a really good draft. Thought Arizona had a really good draft. They took Marvin Harrison Jr., yep. came back, took Darius Robinson yes. from Missouri. Thought they had a good draft. The Chicago Bears. You know, when you get your number one quarterback on the board, then you come back and get, at the very worst, the second or third receiver, depending on who you talk to, and Roma Dunze. Right. I thought they had a good draft. So I think several teams feel really, really good. It's still subjective until these kids get on the field, until they start playing. And you really have to give them at least 2 years before you decide whether the draft was good or bad.
Very nice. So in your opinion, and this is your opinion, who is your favorite offensive player and defensive player going into the draft, and how do you feel about where they went?
Favorite defensive player was the kid Byron Murphy, just because being a defensive tackle, a little undersized, I can relate to that. And him going to Seattle, I think, is a really good pick. Offensive player, favorite offensive guy, and I'm partial, but I mean, I like the wide receiver at LSU, Malik Nabers. You know, he's lightning in a bottle, and he's the closest thing that we've seen to Tyreek Hill, you know, since Tyreek Hill got drafted. So I think those two picks were, I went into it trying to be really, really curious about where those two guys mm-hmm. went. And, you know, one went to New York. We got to see what Daniel Jones is going to be like at the quarterback position. Byron Murphy goes to Seattle. He'll be next to Leonard Williams, so he should have a little bit some help there. So, like, those two guys are maybe not the ideal size guys, but, man, they play big, and I think they're going to be very successful where they go.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping my Chargers got Malik Nabers, but they got Joe Alt, I believe his name was, the tackle mm-hmm. from Notre Dame. So I was mm-hmm. I just felt like we need a guy that can stretch the field, but they felt like we needed alignment. So I was kind of hoping we got Malik Nabers. Let's see. So moving back on to you, moving away from the draft a little bit, how did you get the nickname Booger?
Man, I got that when I was 2 years old. I got called a bunch of things, man. My mother, as a country boy, you know, you get a lot of nicknames. Mm-hmm. And that was one that some of my friends heard, and my sister heard, and everybody used to tease me with it. And, you know, when you're a little kid and things bother you, that, you know, and people know that, they just usually keep doing right. And so that was one of them, man. It just kind of kept going. And here we are several years later. So that was a childhood nickname my mom gave to me.
Right on. And I also heard that you're best friends with our guy, Mike Dillon.
Yeah, Mike's a good friend of mine, man. Mike is a guy we work out together. We don't as much anymore, but I've always been fascinated just about baseball, and just not that I like the sport, I don't love it, but I'm fascinated just about the inner workings of it and by how the business of baseball works. And so I'm always picking his brain about, you know, free agency and arbitration and how these things work and how baseball, you know, GMs will pay a guy, you know, give a guy a 10-year deal at 32 years old, knowing good and well he's not going to play till he's 42.
Right.
But they tack that extra money on just so they can get the deal done. And I don't know, it's kind of crazy where it's like in other sports, they don't do that. Like in football and basketball, like they don't do that. But like they're going to pay you for what they think you're worth. They're not going to tack on. Like, and the prime example is the Albert Pujols deal. When the Angels did the Pujols deal for 10 years, like you knew that you really were only getting 6 years. And it played out just that way. Like the last 4 years were just kind of a waste of everybody's time.
Hey, but can you speak to the similarities, if any, there are between baseball and football?
Yeah, you know, I think there are several things that are similar. Just, you know, when you look at the intangibles, the competitiveness, you know, how you play the game, effort, all those different things. You know, I think the attention to detail in both sports are very, very prominent. You know, it's funny, like Nick Saban made a statement the other day on the draft where he was talking about instincts. And I think both sports are played with instincts because the instincts for a DB to know when to go and try to jump a ball or when to try to knock it down or when to pick it off, those are instincts. Just like it's instinctual for a guy in baseball, you know, I can teach you like what pitch is coming, but only instincts tell you when to swing the bat. Right. And when to do certain things. So I think the instincts in the sports are very, very prevalent, especially, you know, the athleticism comes out and shows a lot more in football. But that's why I'm always kind of wowed by the athleticism in baseball. When you look at guys like Mookie Betts, right, and you look at Mike Trout and, you know, guys that are super athletic, you know, that can do things and be basically 5'2 players. Like those guys really kind of stand out. And you know, when you look at like Altuve, and he could never play football, but in baseball, he's probably gonna go down as a Hall of Famer. Yep. At 5'6".
Yep.
You know, just because of how he plays the game and what he can do. And so baseball has always amazed me. But overall, I think the athleticism and the instincts are probably the two things that really jump out from a similar standpoint.
Right. Who was your favorite Major League Baseball player? This was coming from my boy LaTroy. He wanted me to ask you who your favorite Major League Baseball
player. Favorite baseball player, man. Listen, it was probably Barry Bonds, man. Just because I grew up in that, and when I started paying attention to baseball, you know, the Killer Bees were, you know, it was, what is it, Bonds, Bonilla, and was it Van Slyke? Andy Van Slyke was on that team.
Andy Van Slyke. Yep.
So I grew up watching them. Like this was when Bonds was in Pittsburgh, yep. And then, you know, he makes the jump to San Francisco. And, you know, it was always funny to me how a guy, and I know about all the, you know, accusations, steroids and all that. Yeah. He was a Hall of Famer before they even accused him
of
that. But it was always funny how he took a 32, 34-inch bat and choked up. And I'm like, this dude is choking up 4 inches on this bat and still hitting the ball out of the park.
Yep.
And it was just super amazing to me, man. Dale Strawberry, Doc Gooden. Yep. Like those guys, you know, understanding and watching those guys play, man. I'm trying to think who else, man, because I grew up watching the Braves a little bit too. So you when that pitching staff with Avery, Smoltz, Glavine,
Maddox,
man, like when those guys were rolling, they were fun to watch. You know, yeah, man, like that was cool. We didn't have a baseball team in Louisiana, so everything I saw was from afar. You know, Yankees, you know, nowadays, like even though I met Jeter after he played, just watching that group, and it's always cool to kind of think back about how they won and what they did. Right. And then getting an opportunity to talk to him later on just about, because baseball is a little different. You talk about the similarities, but like the biggest difference in baseball and football is this. Is baseball, it is a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of sitting around. Yep. It's a lot of, like, non-action. And you got to be okay with that. Like, in football, like, we get to a point where we're emotionally ready to play, and you got to be that way for 2-3 hours.
Right.
Baseball, those dudes, like, I used to tell, hey, man, do you ever get, like, excited and pumped up for a game? Like, man, you like, number one, we got 162 of these. Number two, like, I'm going to bat, then I'm going to go back and sit down. Yep. And you know, then I got to go out in the field. I might get a ball hit to me. I might not. Like, it's a lot of time where you just kind of chilling in baseball, man. Who else? I used to like the kid that pitched for San Francisco. Was it Madison Bumgarner?
Yeah.
I always liked the stories. I guess, was he a farmer or something?
Yeah, farm boy, yep.
Yeah, he did something in the offseason, then just showed up and started pitching and just striking folks out. Yep. Like, I'm always enamored by, you know, especially in this day and age when everybody wants to be like, man, you got to be football or basketball, 365.
Yeah.
I mean, this dude just goes to the farm and shows back up and just starts throwing gas by people. So
that's how they used to do it back in the day, man. They play baseball during the season and go home and do something totally different, or play basketball, right, or play football. But now they want you to play, like you said, everything 365 days a year. I don't agree with it, but that's just the way it is. What was your first Major League Baseball game you saw in person? Do you remember?
Wow. In person, man, it wasn't until I got to Tampa, like until I got drafted by Tampa and came down here. And then I went to see, I saw the Rays and Yankees play. So this was 99, 2000. That was my first one. Because growing up, we didn't have baseball in Louisiana.
Right.
And I never went over to Texas or Atlanta. I pretty much watched it on television. So like Yankees, mm-hmm. Yankees, Rays, I think was the first one.
Okay. NBA or NHL, are you into any of those ones? And what are your respective thoughts on the playoffs?
Hockey is better in person. Mm-hmm. I go watch the Lightning when they're in the playoffs and they're making a run. I'll go watch them. NBA, it's like same thing, playoffs. Once the playoffs start coming, then I can do that. I can go watch basketball and stuff like that once the playoffs start. But as far as like game 65, I can't do it. And it's like everybody else. Like you, I watch storylines.
Right. Same.
Storylines and star players and things of that
nature. Same here. I'm going to get a couple more questions to you, man, and I'm going to get you out of here. Where does your love of the Peloton come from?
You know what, man? It started during the pandemic, man, when, you know, you were looking for a way out. That's number one. And secondly, for me, it became like a way that I could stay in shape without the constant pounding and running and doing all these different things.
Right.
So like for me, you know, I try to, you know, when you know better, you do better from a physical fitness standpoint.
Right.
And so I've tried to do that and I look forward to that. But it's an outlet. It's a competitive physical fitness outlet for me to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it and it's fun. And I just love it. You know, just trying to stay in shape a little bit, man. Love to sweat.
Are you into any of these classes with any of your friends or buddies or anybody like that across the country, or you just do it?
Yeah, it's like that's the cool part about it is you can get on there and ride with people and compete. And like me and Mike have ridden, and the Troy's jumped on there, I think, a time or two. Right. But like it's really cool from a dude's perspective because it touches the things that we enjoy, which is the music, the competition, getting in shape, you get your good sweat in, all those different things. So, yeah, it touches all those.
Right on. So what are your favorite hobbies outside of doing your TV work and now being done with sports? What do you enjoy doing besides riding the Peloton bike?
Either Peloton or golf, man.
Oh, like, nice.
And Peloton is not necessarily a hobby because some people look at working out as not a hobby.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, like I enjoy playing golf. I enjoy getting outside, man. I'm a country boy from Louisiana. So for me to get outside and play a little golf and have fun, because no matter how long you play as an amateur, you still never get it. And I think that's the cool thing about us athletes, whether, you know, when you play any other sport besides golf. So I don't care what other sports you play. Golf is something that we try to do and it connects all of us. And we try to, but we'll never master it just because because the people that started playing when they were young and got the proper lessons and they understand how to swim, like we try to go out there and out-athlete the golf ball, and it's very hard to do.
Oh man, listen, now you're talking my language. Golf, I love it. I play it almost every day. I'm a 6 handicap, and it's just, man, I can't control it. And the more I can't control it, the more I want to get out and do it. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
The more you want to get out and play.
I heard that you're a puss 5 handicap and shit talking.
Now, you know what, man? I enjoy having fun, especially with my friends, man. Like, if you know, because most of the people who I'm around usually have enough people telling them and kissing up to them and saying all these different things. But, man, life is about laughing, having fun. If you can't bust your guys' chops a little bit and talk a little noise and have a little fun, because I think everybody in life, regardless whether you're an athlete or not, you know, especially athletes or people who are in the spotlight, have too many times where people are just telling them what they want to hear and just, oh, you're the greatest. And like, man, like sometimes guys need to laugh and be told they suck at something or they're no good or challenging. Like, that's the fun part about it.
That's all me, LaTroy, and Tori do, man, is shit talk when we're around each other. So I can dig it. And then I lied. One more question. I promise I'm going to get you out. It may be way too early, but what's your bold prediction for the 2024-25 NFL season?
Detroit Lions win the Super Bowl. I think that's about in an era where I don't know how bold I would say it is, but in this era for Detroit, I don't think they're looked at as one of the top two or three teams. And so I think they could win the championship.
I think they made a lot of noise last year, so I don't think that's far-fetched to say that they'll compete for a Super Bowl next year. So we have our going out session is what we call the Thick Skin Award Winner of the Week. And it was a toss-up for me between Stephen A. Smith, because he's been making a couple controversial claims this week. But Patrick Beverly, man, last night, going off, hitting the lady with the ball, then getting the ball and hitting the guy with the ball who was talking crap to him. As much crap as he talks and as much stuff as he causes on the court, whatever was said or whatever was done, and I know we're athletes and people say a lot of things, but I mean, he's got to chalk that up because he can't dish it out and then not be able to take it. So throwing that ball at that lady, man, that lady might have became a rich lady overnight. So Patrick Beverly gets my Thick Skin Award of the Week.
Yeah, I like it. I did see that because I was watching, obviously, the playoffs. I was watching that and I saw the whole, you know, at the end of the game throwing the ball. He not only threw the ball one time, threw the ball twice. Then he comes into the locker room and won't answer the lady's question because she doesn't subscribe to his podcast, which, you know, he seems like he wears his emotion on his sleeves. Yep. And, you know, sometimes he can't control it. And when he doesn't, things like this happen. And, you know, that was the incident he and Chris Paul had a few years ago. And now this, it just doesn't look good because he's been a good player. Like, he's the guy that brings that edginess, that toughness to your team. And I think a lot of teams like that, but they can deal without the embarrassment of, you know, doing that to fans. And as athletes, you know, I've never had it that close in football because fans aren't that close. Right. In basketball, literally, they can reach out and touch
you
and have somebody in your ear looking at you. And you can see them in the eye. And they're just talking noise to you. Like, that's got to be pretty tough. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure that that he's not the only one. Like, we've seen Russell Westbrook get into it with fans. We've seen other people. Yeah. Like, there's got to be tough to have a fan that close talking that much noise. And some of these guys, every now and then, they just snap. So hopefully it doesn't happen more often.
Right. All right, man. Well, listen, we enjoyed you. We enjoyed you spending your time with us today on the Thick Skin Podcast with Jock and Hawk. Appreciate it, man, and have a wonderful day. And for the rest of our viewers, we'll be back next week, and hopefully my co-host will be able to come back and rejoin you guys and take over his post here at the Thick Skin Podcast with Jock and Hawk. But until then, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Booger. Thanks, dog.
Anytime, man.
Appreciate you.
Porn, Satan, drugs, therapy. It's not just the list of what I'm up to this weekend. I'm comedian Kiki Anderson, and those are just a handful of the taboo topics I've poked and prodded at so far on my podcast, Indecent, the show where we peel at the wallpaper of polite society. Each episode digs into the dark underbelly of our culture to dissect the things we aren't allowed to talk about around the dinner table, featuring conversations with comedians, activists, journalists, academics. They all help me figure out the who, what, and why behind what is and isn't acceptable behavior. Indecent with Kiki Anderson, where NSFW meets LMAO. Mwah.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.
Next Chapter Podcasts.